Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down
at the Roundtable. Welcome back as we continue our discussion of potential passages from Sula by Toni Morrison.
Okay. A lot of mine are going to be very similar
That's
to
okay.
yours.
And there's read them out. Fair is fair.
And some of these, I may immediately read them and be like, nope, I like something better. Delete.
Okay, that's fine.
When she awoke, there was a melody in her head she could not identify or recall ever hearing before. Perhaps I made it up, she thought. Then it came to her, the name of the song and all its lyrics, just as she had heard it many times before. She sat on the edge of the bed thinking, there aren't any more new songs, and I have sung all the ones there are. I've sung them all. I've sung all the songs there are. So A, it has music in it.
Yeah.
But B, the idea of the, she feels like she has lived all the life there is to live.
Yeah.
And why is that? Is part of that, again, the kind of the denial of opportunity. She's the artist with no medium.
Right. Exactly.
Part of it, that.
That would be part of the conversation if this was chosen. And just so you guys out there, and Sarah E., when you're reading these passages that you selected, I'm going to close my eyes and just listen to the words. That was just really powerful. So, I remember, in the book, when I was reading the book, this passage, I almost put it in the list. And then I was like, I had already chosen so many. I had so many flags. My book is full of post-it notes. But yeah, that's a beautiful passage. And I love what you said about it. I think that's, and the fact that Toni Morrison has her sitting on the edge of a bed, she sat on the edge of the bed, is like, she's so metaphorically sitting on the edge of a precipice, it's just like, and that fatalist, defeatist kind of, I have sung all the songs. There aren't any new ones. They're not coming. There aren't any. There won't be any. I've sung them all. I've done it. It's that finality of that that fatalistic kind of approach to where she is in her life. It's, we would have to be really careful with this one because I feel like, taken in the wrong context and without really discussing it carefully, this could be borderline suicidal thinking, if you really feel like there's nothing left to live for. And in this, the metaphor of songs, like you said, is kind of like life. I love this one, and I think it deserves discussion. I just had to say that because I feel like it could be something we would need to discuss that element and try to talk about that in a positive and awareness raising way. I'm not sure how to express what I'm trying
to. Well, I think it's one we'd have to do a trigger warning for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, that to me then says that probably the more appropriate context for it would be discussion in a podcast where we could put it in context versus when we do the quotes, they're a little bit disconnected.
And they're just out there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's a wonderful thing about coming up with a list of quotes, for each of these books. No matter which passage we pick as a standalone passage, we often use some of our other quotes, in the discussions, if they're relevant in some way. And so I feel like we could do that with this quote. It is a beautiful passage, though. It is. Yeah. I mean, you almost read it and then you think, I got to read that. Wait a minute. This could be suicidal. It's almost like, again, Toni Morrison writes so beautifully about potentially negative or the harder aspects of life, if you will, that you're tricked. You're tricked by the beauty of her language. So
it's true. All right, next one. They held hands and knew that only the coffin would lie in the earth. The bubbly laughter and the press of fingers in the palm would stay above ground forever. At first, as they stood there, their hands were clenched together. They relaxed slowly until during the walk back home, their fingers were laced in as gentle a clasp as that of any two young girlfriends trotting up the road on a summer day, wondering what happened to butterflies in the winter. So this one I enjoyed because of the approach to death. Mm-hmm. It ties into the quote that you liked where it's uncomfortable. Do you get an enjoyment out of death? Mm-hmm. It's surreal here. Mm-hmm. They're not fully mm-hmm. absorbing.
No, right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that too. And I love how you have that evolution of the hand clasping, you know, that first they're clasped together, clenched together tightly. There's something about that, you know, they are holding on to each other so tightly in that moment. And then as they're walking back home, you know, it loosens. And again, you know, having seen a coffin go in the ground, that's the moment that's painful and hard, you know, and your clenched hands and all that you're holding on to whoever is there with you, supporting you at, you know, in that moment, each other supporting each other. And then as you leave, as you're walking home, you know, that intensity of a body being lowered into the ground, a funeral, you know, a burial lessens, you know, it's almost like the tension lessens. And so that's mm-hmm. a really amazingly accurate description of that sensation. Doesn't even, not even just related to these two women, but just in human experience, you know, it's a odd thing, but that's why I think that's why so many human cultures have rituals around death and dying and burials, because you need those moments, mm-hmm. each of those moments, that tense hand clenched moment at the site of wherever that final thing happens. And then as you move away physically from that location, you know, it recedes a little. It's in the past. We put closure on it. The coffin is lowered. The earth is over it. It's done. And that tension lessens a little bit. So there is something deep about this passage that goes beyond just the story itself, and that's one of the qualifications of a standalone passage. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm hard pressed with this one. I really like it. I would say second or third tier. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm gonna put it on third, actually, because although I like it, I do think we have stronger ones.
Yeah so. I agree. Yeah, okay.
Now the next one, I think it's too,
go ahead.
It's too short, right. but I want to read it because I love it.
Okay, that's fine.
The real hell of hell is that it is forever. Sula said that. She said doing anything forever and ever was hell.
That, you know, it may be short, but my God, it's so true, right? I mm-hmm. mean, it is so true. It's that banality and boredom with, you know, repetition with over and mm-hmm. over and over. It doesn't matter what it is, you know, I mean, whether it doesn't matter if it's going to work every day to a dead end job, that's, you know, that's hell. If it's having to cook, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner for your family for decades, that's hell, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. it does it even in creative ways. If, you know, an artist can feel that they've, you know, they say, for example, a painter who you know, uses one medium and has one style, and it's just, at some point, wouldn't they feel like that's just boring? And mm-hmm. isn't boring kind of like being in hell? I mean, there's a lot mm-hmm. of things with this that I think is very, very. It may only be two or three sentences, but I think they're very powerful.
I loved it so much. I wanted to read it, even though I don't think it's probably going to be in our final selection.
No, there's not there. You know, it's almost too general. It's almost too standalone. There's, mm-hmm. you know, we probably need a little more specificity in a quote, but man, I love it. I think it's a great passage.
All right. Here's the next one. It hit her like a sledgehammer. And it was then that she knew what to feel. A liquid trail of hate flooded her chest. Knowing that she would hate him long and well filled her with pleasant anticipation. Like when you know you're going to fall in love with someone and you wait for the happy signs. Hating boy, she could get on with it and have the safety, the thrill, the consistency of that hatred as long as she wanted or needed it to define and strengthen her or protect her from routine vulnerabilities.
That's a tip top one. That's awesome. I mean, there's so much we could do with that. My gosh. I mean, you know, again, I gotta say, life experience matters. You know, when you read passages and they mean something to you, and this is to me, it's like the ultimate standalone passage about, you know, surviving domestic abuse and how you feel about that person, or, you know, anybody who's hurt you in an intimate, close, you know, physical, mental betrayal, whatever. Any, you know, there's something about that description of how that hate, that specific brand of hate feels, that is so powerful, and that she is looking forward with pleasant anticipation to nurturing this hatred, to expressing it, to feeling it, to having it be in her for the rest of her days. That's an amazingly powerful statement right there. I mean, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it also appeals to me for discussions about A, female anger. Mm-hmm. We're not supposed to be angry.
Exactly.
But specifically too, we also have this this trope of the angry Black woman.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, this could be very interesting discussion. Maybe that's a podcast instead of a passage. Mm-hmm. But I'm really intrigued by this one.
I just, you know, hatred is something that we're told in our culture, you know, from when you're tiny, you know, hating is bad. Don't do it. You know, turn the other cheek, you know, all that stuff. And this is Toni Morrison saying, ha ha ha, no, no, no. Hatred is something that this character, i.e. all of us, can embrace, can find joy in, can find pleasure in. I mean, let's be honest. It feels good sometimes to hate someone after you've, especially if it's someone who's hurt you. You need that in order to process the pain. It's part of that pain of hurt, right? If you're hurt, that's a pain. That's a feeling. And having the outward expression of that be hatred for the person that hurt you. I mean, that's human nature. But we're taught and we're told, don't feel that way. Don't do that. You're only hurting yourself if you feel hatred. Well, this says no. Hatred, it's a pleasant thing. It's a, you know, a thrill, a safety, the consistency. Whenever you want it or need it to define and strengthen yourself and protect yourself from routine vulnerabilities. This turns hatred on its head in most Western cultures, I think, you know, that this is something that can be used in a positive way in your life. This negative energy, you know, I mean, gosh, there's so many like mantras and, you know, turn your negative energy into a positive, you know. This is saying, no. Embrace it. Use it. Love it. Love that hatred.
And it gives this character strength to persevere in really difficult circumstances.
And I'll tell you something, there, you know, speaking from experience, there were times when hatred carried me through for some of the bad things I've experienced in my life. So I totally relate to this passage. It's way tip top up there. I remember reading it and almost putting it in the list, and I thought, no, hatred, I shouldn't be promoting hatred. I fell under that cultural thing of, ooh, hatred is bad, and I didn't put it in my list. So I'm really glad you did. Join us next time as we continue our discussion of potential passages from Sula by Toni Morrison.
This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.